Feral Audio.
Well, hello. It's time for another episode of Drew Drogi's Minor Revelations. I started one take of this by saying sweet, sweet back. And then on the second take, I took it back. So I'll say it again. Has anybody ever seen that movie, Sweet, Sweet Back? I haven't, but it's Sweet, Sweet Back's badass song. I don't know. It just came to me. You guys, I'm random. People used to say that all the time, and I hate it. It used to be a thing. We used to always be like, oh my God, they're so fun. They're just so random. Okay. We have a really fun show. I just have to get into something like I always love to. As an industry, and I'm talking about the Hollywood entertainment industry, movie industry, we have to do better. And by that, I mean naming our characters. Our characters have some of the worst names. And once you've named your character a shit name, I have lost all credibility and I'm not going to go see your movie. I mean, okay. Last year, or maybe a couple years ago, Tom Cruise has made these movies where he plays Jack Reacher. No, I refuse to see a movie called Jack Reacher unless I'm in the privacy of my own bedroom with just me, myself, and my phone. No. This week, there's a movie coming out, and we're a week behind, so this would have come out last week, called The Snowman. And I was like, that looks like some fun trash. The character's name is Harry Hole. I'm not kidding. The lead character's name of this serious detective drama is Harry Hole. That's a bad joke. That would not play in Naked Gun. What? I understand it's a Swedish book, but not to sound crazy, like Make America Great Again or America First or whatever, but did no one say to this author, like, when this is translated into English, his name will be Harry Hole? Or is it Harry Hole in Swedish? I don't know. It's Harry Hole. Michael Fassbender read the script and was like, great, I'll do it. Sounds like a plan. Crazy enough about a man who kills people and wraps them up in snowmen. Great, let's add insult to injury and just have my name be Harry Hole. Honestly, you know, the names Jeff Stryker and Peter North are more nuanced, you know? And like, that's like Harry, that's like Girth Brooks, another porn star I highly recommend you Googling. These are like, you can't tell the difference between these names. A few years ago, Kate Winslet in this movie, The Dressmaker, I refused to see that because her name was Tilly Dunnage. No, I'm not going to spend 2 hours with Tilly Dunnage. Jada Pinkett plays Fish Mooney on Gotham. I remember seeing those billboards and I was like, her name's not really Fish Mooney. You know, it's like, come on, nothing better than Fish for her. Mooney, who comes up with these names and thinks these will do? I'm out. I'm not having it. You know, like Dr. Christmas Jones, Forrest Gump, Temple Grandin. I mean, I know that's real, but still, someone had to name her Temple Grandin. That sounds like a name of a normal person. No. Peekaboo Street, another real person, but no. Stop with these crazy names. Just stop, okay? The world's crazy enough. We don't need your names like that. Unless you're Jacqueline Suzanne, who can name her characters whatever the fuck she wants, because I will read Once Is Not Enough, and I will follow the adventures of January Wayne and not think it's weird at all that I'm reading and caring about a girl named January. Because it's a Jacqueline Suzanne book, you know? That woman shot Benzedrine into her eyeballs and ate steak at 4 a.m. It's a crazy world. It's a crazy life, you know? So just stop with these. You know, okay, I made a list of names just off the top of my head that would be better male detective names than these awful, than Jack Reacher or Harry Hole. Okay, here we go. These are all better names. And I just off the top of my head without even thinking. Okay, Jake Figley, Ron Hammer, Dean Slider, Jackson Blunt, Cam Tate, Brad Fountain. Okay, these are just names that I came up with. They all sound porny. They all sound vaguely sexual, but they all are better than Harry Hole. Let's have a show. Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Hi. I'm sitting here with the wonderful Danielle Morrow and Joel Spence. How are you guys?
We're good. We're getting to know each other.
Yeah, we're collecting.
And you guys haven't met before.
No,
we haven't.
Oh, you're both delightful. I'm glad that you're getting to meet on here.
Yeah. So far, nice to meet you.
You too.
You've had plenty of time to catch up because guess what? Drew Drogi was late to his own show.
Oh, gosh.
Like a real trash basket. What have you guys talked about while I was gone?
We did talk about how you guys met.
Okay. Yes.
Killing the Dream.
Yes, yeah. We did a movie called Killing the Dream.
We
think in 2003.
Yeah, I think I would run with that by that point. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think
it was in the summertime and we met then, and that was, you had just moved here. I'd been here a couple years.
Yeah.
And and then we started, I was doing the Groundlings then, but you were just getting started.
Right.
And you had been doing a lot of theater in
Minneapolis.
Yeah. I was going to say St. Paul.
Yeah, don't ever make that. How dare you?
I mean, I feel like, sure.
The worst twin.
Yeah, and then we ended up doing a lot of shows together at UCB over the years.
Yeah,
and
we keep crossing paths.
We do.
It's kind of a delightful thing to rely upon.
I know. It's really weird because then we ended up doing Freak Dance, which was this breakdancing musical at UCB, which we did on stage off and on for 2 years. And then it became a movie
you can
get it on iTunes or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or just go to your local UCB if you live in LA or New York.
True. Yeah.
You can pick up a DVD there. And we did that together. And then this summer we were both on Heathers together. So it's just a very...
Your lives keep popping up.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of people who I met at that 2 year period I was telling you that I remained friends with.
Right.
And who also I would run into in the same pattern. I would be like, oh, I'm not interested in hanging out with that.
Right. You know, you have your, like in college, we always talked about our first week friends. You know, you meet those people the first week and you're like, you're just desperate for any friendship. You're like, you'll do. You're a person. Great. And we have these friends.
We're connecting.
College is great. Mom and Dad, I love college. And then like after a while, you're like, oh boy, I got to get rid of that. I got to shed this skin.
Yeah.
But you, Joel, you were friends with Paula Christensen, right?
She was in the show with her, and Danny and Paula are
friends from the Groundlings. Were you guys in the Sunday Company together?
We weren't. We missed each other, but we started dating two guys who were roommates at the time. So that's how we kind of knew each other, and then we became neighbors.
Oh, funny!
And we love. She's in New York now, but we love her. Her son Abbott. We love
just a doll,
the best kid in the world. Oh,
handsome boy.
Yes,
oh, he
and
is.
Says these like really very profound statements that you know. He's a little old man.
He is, and you know she has a crazy story about that too because I think she went to a psychic or something who basically told her that her first child or she's going to have a child who an old professor who had died will then. Be like this child.
Wow.
Have the soul of this child.
Wow.
And it's interesting because he seriously says like very worldly things, like he has experienced the world or he's gone, not just like kid thing, just very deep and interesting.
They're very wise and they're very simple and this like Zen Yoda, like you're like, wow, that's a beautiful way to look at the world.
Yeah. And,
can we go back to where I said handsome boy?
Yes.
There's been a lot going on in my head since I said that.
Oh my god! Oh god! No, it's so weird now that we're so scared to say, say anything anymore because it's like, you know, and obviously a good reason, but it's like, you know, somebody was saying the other day on another show like this a friend of mine who's a gay man saw this beautiful woman crossing the street and he was just like it took his breath away how gorgeous this woman was. Mm. And he wanted to say something to her, but he was so afraid of saying the wrong thing. And I was like, that's so sad that you can't just go. Because I was like, if you went up to this woman and said, you are stunning, like looking at you brightened my day. I just wanted to tell you that.
Yeah.
And move on. I can't imagine anyone taking offense to that. I think that would just make the world a better place.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and obviously it's not for with any ulterior motive. And, you know, we say these things and we're like, oh God, now can I just say, I you know, you look nice today without seeming like, I know.
Well, you don't know her personality.
Well, exactly.
You know, you don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you should start with.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know your personality.
You might be the worst person in the world.
You probably are a terrible person. If you have to dress, if you have to look at, if you have to leave the house with that much effort, what are you covering up, lady?
My friend Will Hines tweeted once, this is what beautiful people say constantly. Oh, thanks. That would be awesome. That's on a loop of like, oh, that'll be awesome, thanks, because everything is just given to
yes
them.
Just everything's given.
I remember being at a commercial audition, and a casting director was there, and he was running an audition where models were the ones mm-hmm. auditioning, and he was like, everyone is late for these auditions. Yeah. Models are always
late. It's like me. I'm always late. I'm a model and I'm always late.
But they get away with it. No one's mad at them.
Wow.
They can come in with their animals or, you know, anything
like
that.
Oh my God. Isn't that
funny? And just like they could be like 3 hours late and not even know that they were 3 hours late.
Right.
And no one's
mad at
them.
How do you function like that?
Can I forgive you for being late? Oh, thanks. That would be awesome.
Thanks. That would be awesome.
Yeah, but I don't. He was even saying it in a way of like, they don't even realize that they're late.
Yeah.
It's just like sometimes they don't show up, you know,
that is
and
don't care. That is so wild.
It is.
God, I wish
I am always, I do believe that there is a gene. Like, I think it's part of your DNA, whether you're like a person who's always on time or someone who's always mm-hmm. late. I do think there's something because my father was crazy about us being on time mm-hmm. everywhere. You have to be on time. The Sunday mornings of being yelled at and I talk about this a lot on the show, but like about going to church.
Yeah.
I made the family late. And I have something in me that I always run 10, 15 minutes late. I also overbook my life where I don't take into consideration like today, like, oh, there's traffic. It's Los Angeles in the afternoon, Friday afternoon. Yeah. Drew, are you kidding? You know,
and yeah, you but still I'm, live in
but
North
I am,
Carolina.
Kind I'm of like, so mad at myself on the whole way that like I can't.
Yeah,
not that that makes it better for other people, but I can't imagine being 3 hours late and then not knowing that I'm late.
Yeah.
Or acknowledging it. That's a whole different.
But I think
species.
It is like I agree. I think it's like a beautiful person syndrome where when you're beautiful, a lot of, like everything comes to you pretty easily.
Well, I will say when I was a model for a day when I did the Marc Jacobs photo shoot.
Yes. Which was the
so craziest awesome. Thing. It was one of the most awesome experiences, one of the most fun gigs I've ever had because for my Chloe 70 character, Marc Jacobs is a fan of it and he put me in his campaign for his new clothing line last year.
Great.
And I was so honored because I love him and he's obviously so talented and super nice guy. And I'd hosted a couple parties for him before. And so he asked me to do this and, I flew in on a red eye that, it was from LA to New York. And I remember landing and getting this awesome hotel. I had like an hour to get ready before the car was going to pick me up. And it was going to, and I mean, I landed at like 6:30 in the morning and the car was going to pick me up at like 7:30 or something. So I showered and I got ready and the car, there was just a confusion about like when I was going to get picked up or how or what. And so the car picked up one of the other models, but didn't pick me up in the same car. And so I waited for like an hour at the hotel on my car to get there. And I was such a nervous wreck because I was like, I'm here. Oh. And part of me was like, do I just walk? Cause it's like, you know, I mean, I'm like, it's like, you know, and they were like, don't walk. They were like, we're sending a car. But I was like, I don't know what the time frame is.
Yeah.
He's asked me to do this. I'm so embarrassed.
Yes.
It wasn't my fault. It wasn't it was the car company that was confused.
Yeah.
It wasn't either one of ours problem. But I was a nervous wreck. I was like so upset, you know, getting there. There was no rush. They were so nice.
Yeah.
And I wonder about that. Like, now that you say that like they were, I mean, I walked in the door. They're like, have a seat. There's breakfast. There was so much food there, which I couldn't believe in a model shoot.
I know.
It was incredible food. Everybody was so, they were like, have a seat. Take it, you know.
Have some carbs.
Have some carbs. Exactly. Bulk up. And they did, you know, and everything was just the most relaxed vibe.
I start to know, you know, why they call us so early to TV work days
yes.
because they anticipate something yes. huge happening where you're 4 hours late.
Right,
I'm like,
right.
And then, but I don't think of that when I'm sitting there for 4 hours before I'm called to the set. I'm like, right. why was I called right.
so early?
Yeah.
Right.
And, but I always forget about how relaxed everybody is. And it's so, it's such a relief.
I know. Once you get there and you're like, all right, we're here for work. They've allotted enough time. Also, we're also used to doing so many DIY projects where you show up and you're doing it within 10 minutes yes. of
yeah,
getting there.
Yeah.
Right.
And you have to, you know, and you're like, hey, can you do me a favor and come over and shoot this thing with me?
Yeah.
So you're like, we have an hour to shoot this. So it's on that schedule.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you're on something bigger, like you're like, they're like, relax, order some breakfast, get a foot massage. How are you?
Why'd you get here so early?
I know, exactly. One day on Heather's, I got there like, I mean, maybe 15 minutes early. Maybe it was 30 minutes early. And they were flipping out of what to do with me.
Yeah.
They're like, you're early. We don't know. And they were like, we can't put you in makeup yet because you're. And I was like, they were more nervous when I was early, you know. And I was like, I can hang out. I'm good. I'm never early. So when I'm early, I'm just like, I'm so chill when I'm early. It's totally fine. I'm not going
to
be mad.
I can't be bothered to work sometimes if I'm there earlier. It's like, oh, now I have to get to it.
I know.
I'm just enjoying this, doing nothing.
I know. Now you're making me, it's really, really, really rough.
I feel like I have the kind of opposite. Well, I guess it is the same thing, but I tend to always be early on everything because I do. But like the same idea or the mental thing with it of just having an anxiety of like I can't be late. And I give myself way too much time in advance to get somewhere because I'm like – because I – you know, think like it will take me an hour and a half to get it.
That's good. That's great. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. I mean, I'm like, I'll give myself 10 minutes to get there. And
it's just LAX.
I know. And it's like, I've lived here 18 years and don't realize how things take.
I think when I mentioned you're still in North Carolina, I still think of, San Antonio freeway structure, which is where I grew up. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, this will takes 20 minutes to get anywhere at the most in San Antonio.
Yes, yes.
Or at least that's my memory of it. So right. I still haven't translated that sometimes to L.A., which bites me on the boom boom.
I know.
I like that phrase.
That came from Kill the Dream.
Is it really? Oh, Did it really?
I think so.
Oh, my God. I love it. Bites me on the boom boom. Isn't it funny when you get back with people? Like you can be away from people, and then things come back
things
when
come
you
back.
Get.
Totally, I
don't know.
That.
I love it too. Like I just had one of my best friends from college was married last weekend, so I had a lot of college friends were in town, and we get back, and our references just immediately jump into college people that we went.
And you they've just been lying dormant.
I know.
Years. Yeah.
It's so weird. Our brains are so crazy like that. Like, when I'm with you, I can connect. You know, it's just.
Yeah.
It's very bizarre.
Tis.
Very strange. Tis. Yes. Well, I want to hear a story. I want to hear. Okay. Who wants to go first?
Well, I guess there's something. I've got two in case we need a second.
Okay, great. But I love it.
They're both of them are kind of moments where I'm like, "What am I doing?" Like at the moment, and I didn't know up until then.
Right.
I do this. This is not uncommon for me to do where if I'm back in San Antonio, I will go to or anywhere, any place where I've lived, I will drive to where I used to live and just look at it.
Mm.
And I have a nostalgia sense. I don't know if you guys have moments of nostalgia. That doesn't work in my brain for some reason. It may be because every era of my life, it's been complicated. There's good things and it's always like, well, on the other hand, you know.
Right. Sure.
So it's just, I don't know why I do it. I think I just like to witness it or look at it and see it with new eyes or just like see how far I've come or if I've not.
Did you move around a lot?
Growing up?
Yeah.
Up until I was six.
Okay.
So I think I'm pretty much a San Antonio.
Okay.
Really. But I went to college in Dallas, lived in Minneapolis for 8 years, lived in London for a year, moved out to LA. So there's been I like to.
Sure.
This is the longest I've been in LA anywhere, I think. But I was down in San Antonio last year, I think, and there's not a lot to do, but I did my dad's at work or something like that, and I went to my middle school, just to do, like, because I've done that before. I just look around. I just want to see, like, this world meant so much to me.
Right.
When I was there, and now it seems so small. It's kind of, maybe it's kind of a part of me trying to let go of stuff, and it does work.
Like, yeah.
There's positive.
Yeah, sure.
However, I went, and school was in session, and I walked into the school, and I was like, oh, this is cool, because I get to witness just all the everybody milling around and going to class or whatever. And I parked my car in the lot, walked in. I mean, already everybody's like, what are you?
And I know.
I walk into there's like main courtyard area, and I see, for some reason, I look up and I see the sign that says all visitors should check in. And I was about to just start walking around. Okay.
Right.
So there was something I was like, oh, I got to follow rules here. So I walked into the principal's office, or the main office, and there's a student who's working the front desk as like some sort of, that was part of, I don't know if that happened in your schools, where you could, if you were in eighth grade, you could spend an hour doing admin work.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It was like considered like an easy job, like, or an easy class that you could just do your homework in.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I walked in, and she was an eighth grader at oldest. And I said, hey, is it cool if I just walk around? I used to go to school here. And as I was saying that, that's when I realized, what am I doing? And then I realized what I was wearing, which was like gym shorts and
A
grubby shirt, a hat, like a baseball cap, and I was unshaven.
Oh my God.
And she looked so confused, and then said, I don't think, let me get the assistant principal.
Oh my God.
And I was like, don't. I was I didn't want to like interrupt her, but I was like, you don't have to do this because I'm leaving immediately. And then she disappeared, and then the assistant or vice principal came out and said, yeah, we can't allow you to walk around. And I was immediately, even before she spoke, like was trying to say, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. Oh, that was the other thing. There was a moment where the young woman who went to go get the vice principal came back, and I was just in my head completely by that moment. But she got back and just was back at her computer, and I was waiting for the vice principal to come out and get in trouble again after all these years. But I looked at the young eighth grader, and she made eye contact with me, and then shifted so quickly back to her computer, like she did not want to make eye contact with me.
Right.
Which was totally wise.
Yes.
And then I just kept on apologizing to the vice principal. I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. What am I doing? Which probably made me look even more guilty.
Of course.
That I was acknowledging how creepy this all was.
Was it the same principal and vice principal,
like all completely different.
Yeah.
So she, like, everybody was so nice, they weren't overly nice. They were like, well, we considered this really quickly, and
you can't do this. My God.
And I don't know if it's just for in the last 10 or 15 years that has been a rule where you just can't walk around. It's probably been there for as old as the world.
Right.
But I felt, I just made us a probably even more pervy-looking retreat to my car of just, like, walking fast.
Oh, my God.
And with my head down.
Oh, my God.
And then I realized there were cameras. I was, like, way in my head.
Oh, my God.
I think it was a lot with what I was wearing that day, which I didn't bother to make any sort of, like, choice of that I was presentable.
Well, and if you're like me, like, I forget that I'm a 40-year-old man. Like, I forget, like, I'm a man.
Yeah.
Like, I just think, hey, I'm going to go check out my school. And then it's like, oh, to the people that are, like, younger,
yes.
I walk in and I'm like, I'm their parents' age.
Yes.
You know what I mean? But I don't have a kid.
Right.
So I have no business.
Your only option
here
is a business suit.
You know, absolutely. Like, and I never would wear a business suit. I would be like you in the jeans, unshaven.
Yeah.
And, you know, or the shorts. And I'd be like, I walk around and I totally get that. Also, you're going back to a place where you would maybe get in trouble, and you're scared of authority, and all that comes back. So all that, like, I'm being caught, I'm doing something wrong,
scurrying out of my middle
even
school,
even when I haven't been.
Would.
You know, I love that you're doing that. I had a friend who, a couple of years ago, we kept making plans to get together and have lunch, And she has a kid, and you know, and it would just be one thing after another, and we couldn't do it. And finally, we made plans on this one day, and she was like, "Okay, this is the." And so we made the plans, and then, like 2 days before, or maybe the day before, she told me, she was like, "I totally forgot that day. I have to do Thanksgiving at my kid's daycare that day. It's like a great Thanksgiving."
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And I was like, "You know what? We've done this so many times back and forth." She goes, "You know, I mean," she also said, "You're welcome to come if you want to, if you want that to be our lunch. It's like a potluck Thanksgiving dinner thing." And I was like, "You know what? Let's just do that because I'm so busy and booked and I'm not going to be able to do this again."
Yeah.
This is the day I had planned. Yeah. It'll be fine. I'll go to see your kids' daycare and we'll catch up and you'll have some break, whatever. Yeah. Well, so I went there and as I parked my car, I get a text from her saying, "I'm stuck at the mechanic, so I'm gonna be late. But I know that you know some other parents that are gonna be there, so look for so and so. And when you're there, so
and
I walk.
Just introduce yourself around.
Yeah, just walk around. And so I walked into this daycare.
I'm here for Thanksgiving
daycare.
You know, and it was oh my god. And I had and I didn't even think about it until I got there. Until I walked in the room because." I'm like, okay, that's fine. I'll wait till you get there.
I'm just a man walking into a school.
Right. I'm just a random lone grown man walking in.
I mean, you're right to say that because you know who you are. You're not like thinking I would be anybody else in that situation
of
but
course.
A normal, decent person.
Right.
But the optics are terrible.
And I'm walking in and it doesn't hit me until I get there and I'm seeing these kids running around and some parents are kind of looking at me confused and seeing that I'm not with a kid and kind of grabbing their kid and kind of walking away. And I'm just sort of like, oh, wow, I am. And I was like, I'm going to kill my friend until she gets here because I'm like, I promise I'm just here to meet a friend. You know, and it sounds like guilty, like, I'm just meeting a friend here
You're
for lunch.
Yeah.
Your friend, who is he three or four or, you know, and it's like, wait, who is your friend, sir? Yeah. You know, and so I know that feeling there's just nothing you can do in that moment. The more you do to try to seem.
Yes. And that's what I did. I did the more I could. I just kept on trying to cover, which made it look even
way
more.
Way worse. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Way more guilty.
Yeah. It's just, it's so strange. And
or
I
just,
think that,
just lie and just be like, oh, God, I forgot something in my car.
I know. And then it's like, but then, you know, they're just like,
that's the oldest experience.
They're like, he was planning on doing something really dirty here. And he got the second, you know, had second thoughts and he's now leaving. And we really, you know, we handled that situation.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, like somebody who's really a sociopath, who's really going to go and do that would have none of those feelings, would just go right
totally.
In,
yes.
Would know exactly how to lie brilliantly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And would immediately, you know. And you hear the stories of someone going in and saying, "I'm so-and-so's parent. I need to go and get them out of school." And then, you know, those are the people that are.
And our brains, I'm making a leap, that our brains, for better or for worse, are wired to make a joke in those situations.
Oh, absolutely.
And there is no joke. It's a no-bit zone.
Right. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Because if I say, sorry, I should get away because there's a restraining order. Sorry about that.
Right.
You know, yeah. Oh, I know.
This is what I would say to you guys talking about it. But if I had said that there.
They would take it very seriously, and they would have to. And the more you do that, also our imaginations are so wild.
Yeah,
that like you know what we're trained to do and how we're trained to think is that we're constantly
leaping to conclusions.
In these sort of scenarios.
And
then I also like you know a principal at a middle school is probably not going to be somebody that's going to be our friend. Maybe I'm being very rude, very you know.
At that situation, no, they're not on friend patrol.
And so I also, like, I have a thing where I'm not used to someone, I hate when I feel like I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I won't let anyone talk to me like I'm in trouble. Like, it just makes me crazy.
Yep.
So then I get real mouthy, and that's not helpful at all either. It's like, what am I don't know, I forget, like.
Oh, a man can't walk around a school that he likes?
Yeah, sorry. Not like, I went here or anything.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like.
I'm a hobby hawk. I should be able to.
but I haven't gone back to my I've gone back to my college a couple times, but I have not gone back to my high school.
There's a loophole that I discovered more years ago, which is during the summer. Who the hell cares? You're just walking around an empty school. The courtyards are sort of like you can.
Yes.
There's not like a bunch of people policing the area. And I'm not saying that everyone should do this, and it's still dodgy, but I did that once years ago and it was fine. I was just, mm-hmm. It was kind of nice to be there and see it. And then 10 minutes later, walked away satisfied of just seeing it.
I also feel like just with middle school in general, I always had, I don't know, middle school was weird.
Yeah.
For me, I didn't have. Elementary school is fine. High school is fine. But middle school, I don't know, it's like a weird.
Oh, same here.
It's the strangest time for any human being.
It's the worst.
I'm with you. It was a little, maybe that's part of it, is to kind of go to where you were at your most, you had most anxiety, and be there without it is kind of nice. Be there without anxiety.
Mm-hmm. It's very, very zen, very.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember
and then you
when,
just masturbate whenever you want there.
Anywhere, anywhere and everywhere. I just say, a grown man can't masturbate in public? Okay. Don't see that sign up.
Yeah.
Principle.
Well, put up a sign.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't see a sign. I don't know.
Welcome to the Dollhouse came out. I remember being like, that was how I felt. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't.
It captured.
I wasn't really always treated like Don Wiener, but I definitely had those feelings.
Yeah.
And by high school, I knew who I was a little bit more. I learned how to be funny, and I was more popular.
Yeah.
But middle school, especially seventh grade, that was the worst year. That was the year that was like, this is the end of everything.
You know?
So I would never want to go back. It's like we were in an old building that I'm sure has been demolished at this point now in Lincolnton, but it was like there was no air conditioning.
Ugh.
And we were, that was the worst year of my life. It was horrible. And to go back to that, I'd be like, I don't ever want to feel that. Where did you grow up, Danny?
I grew up in Thousand Oaks, Westlake Village.
Okay. So I think I knew that you grew up here. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
A little north of here. School is a very interesting thing when I think back to it. And I was just talking to a friend of mine, and we realized like we had so many crazy teachers too that we never when going through it realize that your teachers are insane. And then when you look back or you think back to certain things, you're like, God,
right,
who was teaching us,
who was doing that,
just like crazy
some of the most deranged people. Like I had teachers that changed my life, that were the most incredible people understood me better than my family did. And then mixed with some of the absolute worst.
Yes.
The very first show I ever, really, for the very first solo show I did was called Bad Education, and I did a couple stories about the worst teachers I've ever had.
Yeah.
And after every show, I would have people coming up to me and saying, if I would love to do a show that's just storytelling about terrible teachers that you've had, because everyone has had that teacher. And in seventh grade, I had a teacher who went to church with my parents, and everybody thought that she, and she was very eccentric, and she was a hippie, and she didn't wear makeup, and she was the language arts teacher, and everybody's like, oh, Drew, and they're gonna love each other. And she was a nightmare. Oh. She was a charlatan. She made us watch Dead Poets Society, and just pretended that was her. She didn't teach us anything. She was so cruel. I had a giant trapper keeper with all my notebooks in it, because I was such a nerd. And she would call it the Towering Inferno. And I didn't really get the reference at all, but she would always call it that. And it felt so mean.
Yeah.
And she's bullying.
It was bullying.
Yeah.
And I would be so exhausted from class and being called fag every day that I would put my head down on the because also she wasn't teaching anything. There was nothing.
Yeah.
So I was like, this is my time to sleep and just like not acknowledge her, because it was such bullshit. And she told my mom at church that she thought I was on drugs.
No.
As I'm telling this, I feel like I've said this on here before. If people are listening to it, they know this whole story. But
you told me in the album podcast. And I was,
oh my God, that's what it was. Okay, yeah.
So you're used to telling me.
I've told this story before, and it was like, but it was like the person you think who is going to be your friend or the teacher, you're like, you're actually the worst.
Yeah.
Because you are, you're mean and.
Yeah.
Yeah. Years later, she left her husband after she read the book, The Bridges of Madison County. That tells you everything you need to know about that woman.
Language arts. And that's,
left
that's
her husband after she read that shitstorm Hallmark book.
Yeah. Oh, literature, yeah. You mean?
Uh-huh.
I had a crazy second grade teacher who at the time, every parent wanted their kid in there. Every kid wanted to be in her because she was mm-hmm. beautiful. She had beautiful red hair. Almost like, I guess I would compare her to like a Jennifer Aniston when she was first on Friends, where just everyone thought she was cool and
her charisma, her style, everything
about her was just cool. And if you were in her class, oh my God, second grade, you made it. And I got to be in her class and I was like, yes, we got it. You know, I just so remember that. And she would put on a rainforest play and we would learn sign language to Michael Jackson songs. She taught us Russian, like just like awesome that. Teacher. And she would get from time to time bouquets of flowers sent to her classroom from a secret admirer. And we all would be like, oh my gosh, who's sending you these flowers? Like all into it. Like,
which one of our dads is sending?
I know. This is so crazy.
Just
I love
like,
it.
So into it again, like all of us were like, oh my gosh. She started, she got engaged to this man named Bud. And her last name is Rose, so we'd always call them Rose. Like this is obviously way before hashtags, but like,
If
there was Instagram or anything around, we would just like you know be hashtagging Rosebud and taking pictures. And he was a gorgeous model, and he helped out with the rainforest play,
gross.
Like making waterfalls lifts, and stuff like that.
That name Bud just got a huge lift by being combined with Rose. Otherwise, Bud.
Yeah,
is just,
I know. Otherwise,
Bud
it's just
not
much
a
of a
name.
Yeah,
you
know, exactly.
Name, but he was like he looked like a model going back to model, like just gorgeous guy.
Yeah. Arrived
and
3 hours late every
time. Was like and but then like slowly things you started to realize her craziness started coming out a little bit where you know she would talk about her wedding and she would go up to the popular girls in our classroom and you know secretly tell them you're gonna be in our wedding like I'm gonna make you a bridesmaid but not everyone
this is second grade
then birthday parties of course everyone if you had a birthday you invited her to your birthday and she would only go to a select few like the popular people
Rose
the very wealthy you know the wealthier families she would go to their birthday parties and I remember she did not go to my birthday. And I remember my mom telling me recently, like, she was just so sad for me, and I was so sad. I didn't even remember that I was sad, so it didn't affect me that much. But things like that, you know, crazy things like that. We found out later that those bouquets of flowers she sent to herself. There were no secret admirers. She just would send these bouquets of
secret
admirer to her.
Lunatic.
Creating
she then
her own story.
Told the class that she had a brain tumor. She didn't have a brain tumor.
Oh, she didn't.
She just lied.
Even if you do, you don't tell second graders that you have a brain tumor.
I know. It's so crazy. Because again, when you're in her, I just remember being a student. I so remember that grade too because you just wanted to be in her class.
Of course.
Yes. Just idolized everything about her. And then obviously looking back, you're like, holy shit, she's not, like we were. Being taught by this crazy
You're being abused by this
woman.
Yeah,
just
what
like,
happened to her?
All I know is she's now married to someone, and I think they have kids, but that's all I know. I don't know any more information.
She created a whole.
She did.
Some people do that. They create their own reality to such a degree that you're. It's fascinating.
It is. Yeah, because I guess you could never imagine doing something like that. Mm-mm. Or if you start it, maybe it just starts getting...
Oh, what a tangle.
More, it just gets more.
As a kid, I was such a nerd, and I love my teachers so much. I used to draw pictures of all of them.
Aww.
And, like, I used to, like, I loved my teachers. Like, my teachers were so important to me.
Yeah.
And there was part of me that really came alive at school that, like, you know, that it was and you're there so much like you grow up in school like you know you spend you know 8 hours a day or whatever like there and so it's such a formative time and the socialization that happens and how you know and then you know when like most kids you love movies and TV and when that's happening in front of you you know, like all of that kind of stuff. That's so crazy manipulative to all that stuff.
To have, like, it's bad enough when there's friends in your class that don't that manipulate or just don't go to your parties, but to have the teacher participate.
I know in the that teacher to do that. I know it is like.
I mean, we all teach improv, I mean, I don't know about you two, but I don't go to like my students' parties. I mean, I haven't taught in a while, but and we're all adults,
yeah,
right.
But like, I feel like, and I remember when I was, you know, taking improv classes, and we would always invite our improv teacher, and I remember I had one teacher who was like, you know, I just don't do that, and I was like, well, that's weird. Who does she think she is? And now I'm like, I totally get it because. Yeah. And this is these are all 18 to, you know, 28 to 50, 60s, yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, it's people, you know, and I'm like, the teacher walks into the party, the party becomes about the teacher. Yeah. That's the one thing you have in common is this class and this teacher. And it's an opportunity for the teacher to hold court and to make the whole night about you.
Totally. As a student, you just idolize.
All you want is more information from your teacher. All you want is, and I realize that, like, you know, I've had a couple classes that when it's like a day class usually on our next to last class, because the last class, you know, you have to give conferences and stuff, but the next to last class will like go across the street and get a beer after class or something. And that's fun to do.
Yeah.
But I realize when I go there, I'm like, I'm on. Like, we're not equals. Like, even the class is done, they want to ask me questions. They want to ask me all about, like, I could really abuse that if I was really into that sort of power. I could be like, when I moved to town and blah, blah, and here are the famous people that I went through the program with, and I'll tell you about them. They want to know everything. And it comes from a genuine place of just like, they really are curious and they want to know, and they, but it's gross when
I've never been invited to a party by any of my students.
What?
To this day, you are not invited.
But I also think I do give off a vibe of like, even during break, I'm like, I'm out. Like, I don't want to talk
to really
you.
That's really good. That's really good.
Because I think I also just need a break from them.
Oh, 100%.
You know? I think the break is for, like, I think the break is for teachers. They don't need one.
But there are, you know, a lot of teachers, and I'm always like, maybe I should do this, where they hang and they talk. And I'm like, I should probably talk to them a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, just to, like, I don't know, even have some sort of, I don't know.
I remember, yeah.
But there's something about it that I need that downtime too. I have to immediately get out of there.
Yeah,
break,
me
because
too.
They will hang out and they want to talk to you. And, you know, and it's like, break is break. Like, we're done, you know, for this 15 minutes, I need to take time away.
Does the Groundlings, does the training center there have a break room for you?
They do, but I don't know that a lot of teachers go. I haven't taught there in about a year, and I know they have a new school, so I don't know.
Yeah, they have a little teacher's lounge area.
Sunset, there is one, and that's much better than what used to happen, which was at break, you would walk out of the class and be with – there was no place to go.
Right. Yeah, well, also at UCB, they didn't have – they would teach – before they had the training center, they would teach at different theaters, and so there was no – you know, we do have, like, the office that we could go and hang out or whatever, and – you know, there's...
It's funny. I remember there was one night after their graduation show where they said, you want to have a beer afterwards? And I was like, yeah, I like this class.
Yeah.
And that's not the prerequisite. I like every class. But I was like, all right, fine. And there was a bunch of people there, not just the students. There was like 8 students and I want to say about 6 other people that came to see the show that are just friends with the students. Mm-hmm. So, and I was at the end of a table... And it was at Birds, and it was pretty loud in there. It can get pretty loud and crowded in there. And I can't remember who I was sitting next to, but we were just small talking, or he just started our conversation with me. And it was not about anything, probably about where one of us grew up or something like that. And in the middle of it, I turned and I noticed that the entire table was trying to listen to me.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that
put,
like, it got me so, like, I wanted to leave.
Exactly.
I'm not saying anything important and, stop.
Right. Know? I know. You realize that, you know, you're,
and I don't have anything to say.
Right.
To say.
Yeah. And I'm just a person right now and I didn't know that I was being, you know,
it's the celebrity.
You gotta bring her, but
teacher.
And I do think people kind of they get in that position of power, and it's something they've wanted forever, and they finally have it, and they're like, and it's a thing. It's like, again, and I've had, you know, some of my greatest teachers at the Groundlings who are, you know, You know, all the way from, you know, high school, college, every stage of the game, I've had amazing teachers. I've been so lucky. And then you get the one or occasional one that's just doesn't understand that relationship and doesn't understand that, like, you know, I refuse to, and I was, when I was a teacher, I refused to be like made a guru. I hate, I'm so creeped out by that. It's like, you know, and the more I would teach, the more I would learn to say, I don't know.
Yeah.
And be okay with that.
Yeah.
And be like, I don't know. I mean, maybe this, maybe that. And I'm sorry that, you know,
I'm like,
I don't hold the answers, you know, and that's kind of what makes teaching fun.
Yeah.
It's an experiment. You know, I don't, there's no, you know, key in the back of the book.
The teachers that I remember in high school that made a big impact on me across the board treated me like an adult and not a child.
Yeah.
And they were not, it was not manipulative. They just, that's who they were.
Right.
And I.
Well, probably because they were also just smart people who.
They had nothing to prove.
Yeah.
Right. Teachers. And I think if you're really called to teach and if you really enjoy teaching, you know, that it comes through. Like, it's not about anything else. It's not about needing attention or, you know, fame on whatever level. It's just about, like, I really want to. I mean, to me, when I was doing it, I always loved because it was, like, 3.5 hours that I didn't have to think about myself, what I was doing.
Yeah.
I went in, and I could totally just leave me at the door.
Yeah.
And just – and I loved when people surprised me and – teaching improv is fun in that way because you really you have the structure that you teach and you know what exercises you're going to do, but it's always new, it's always different. I loved that. But I found that when I was getting run down or when I was just like not, I had to like take a break because I would get over it. You know,
you do, really quickly. Well, it is draining. You do have to. Yes. It's a lot of your energy because you are putting a lot into what you want to hopefully. Teach them, and it's.
There's been occasional classes where I walk out of the class and I have to upload everything in my life because I was so. I walk out going, where do I have to be somewhere now? I
know. Right. Yes. I know.
I don't know if it's just. I was just, it's not like I was a better teacher then. I just was so engaged
with
what was happening in front of
me. Well, you have to be. And as a teacher too, you don't realize that like your attention is, your senses are heightened.
Yeah.
You're paying attention to every, like the noises, like saying, you know, nuances that your every behavior, all the, and like dialogue, what do they just say? And I got to remember that. I got to do that. So yeah, it's exhausting at the end. Sometimes you walk out and you're like, I don't know. Who I am, where I am.
Yeah, it is, especially, I would teach teen classes, too, sometimes. Wow. And those are just, like, a whole other beast.
Teen improv?
They're just,
I've done it before, too.
It's
nuts because their energy levels are so inconsistent. Like, you have some days where they're bouncing off the walls.
Oh, my God, I know.
And other days that they are exhausted and they won't get, you can't even get them up to do anything.
Yeah, it's a whole different world. And, you know, some of them are there because it's something their parents signed them up for.
Yeah.
Some of them are there and they want to be there and it's really amazing. But they are, I also find with teens who I love them, but it is always like the craziest classes with them because they, but in a good way, because they really do use their imagination and, but they really, they're absolutely insane and they, it's hard for them to take any direction from you at all. And they just kind of do their own thing. And you just have to be, okay, go for it.
Right. And be happy that they're playing.
Teach me how to Snapchat and, and we'll be even.
Exactly. Put a cartoon cowboy hat on my face and, and give me a long pink tongue.
And do whatever you want. I did. I had a teen teach me how to Snapchat because it was like the one form of social media that really confused me the most. And it was so sad for me to admit that because I'm like, I'm still young.
I'm
totally like.
Yeah.
Sure.
A teen like you. And I'm not. And Snapchat was the one thing that just really made me feel like an old person. Because I'm like, I have no idea how to use this. And I finally had to be like, can you just teach me how to do it? And they did. And I now know how to use Snapchat.
Got invited to any parties, though?
No.
No. We'll keep it that way.
I one time got a gift card. But,
oh, see, there you go.
No
there
party go. Invites.
No parties.
Yeah, try no party, tumor no parties.
I'd rather much rather have a gift card than a party any day.
Oh, yeah. I know.
That Starbucks gift card, I'm good.
Yeah, yeah.
Fine with me.
Oh, God. And it was an early class, too. One of my first classes that did it. So I'm like, oh, well, this happens
this is
every
happen
class.
All time.
Exactly. Never happened again. Never happened again.
Well, Danny, do you have a story? Or?
I do. I guess back to school
great,
stuff
great.
Too.
Ronnie Dangerfield.
Sally back Kellerman.
Yeah, that's exactly
Robert
what
Danny
I just
Jr.
watched it.
sure. Thornton Mellon.
Thornton Mellon.
My friend, also a Danny, she was in that second grade class with me, and we were really good. We were best. We were enemies, and then we were friends. That's great.
Nice.
And then we ended up going to, instead of going to a public high school together, we both went to a private all-girls high school. And we were the only one in our friends to do that. So we only had each other. Hmm. And there were a lot of other girls coming from different schools. So there were a lot of, like, big groups of friends coming together there. Yeah. And so we, of course, were in no classes together. So at lunch, we're like, we have to get, yeah, we just were like, we have to meet each other. And we're like, okay, we have to make friends. Like, how do we make friends? And we're like, well, we just saw Titanic. Maybe if we like start to reenact Titanic, because there was like this wall that had like a ledge or something, and it kind of looked like the end of the ship. So we're like, let's just like reenact Titanic. And we did. We just did that. Every lunch, we're like, is anyone looking at us? Like, is anyone? And we're like, oh,
just
you know
pose,
what else?
Just the, like,
oh,
the,
we would
the,
like say you know, the line that famous,
king world,
yeah, King of the World.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And then we were like, oh, we should also, you know, reenact like Helen Keller, and we would do scenes
Wawa
from
scene.
That,
mm-hmm.
and you know,
miracle
just
worker,
like yeah, miracle
worker
scenes.
First play I was ever in.
Really?
Oh.
I play the doctor at the beginning. That tells the parents she's doing fine.
Oh my God, I love it. I feel like if we were doing it now, that'd be the part you would play. You know, it's like Mike's
returning
the role of the doctor who says everything's fine. Joel Spitz.
And it's in within. I don't know if it was the particular cut of this play, but.
Sorry, there's a biker gang outside. It's Burbank.
It's next. I don't know if it was the particular cutting of the play, but. The first line of the play is she'll live, like the sort of snarky, I'm shaking the thermometer out because the baby's in a crib.
Oh,
the parents
God.
Are right there. I say she'll live. And I say a few things to the parents and then I'm off. And then they walk up to the crib and they go, oh, our little Helen. Helen. So it's in
oh,
the same
my God,
scene,
I love it.
And they start to kind of wave their hand or something like that. I don't know if it was a particular, but that's the worst doctor ever.
Oh my God, Helen.
Like, don't
Helen.
Worry about it.
Also, just that writing of just like, why? Why couldn't you be the one to give them the news? Like, isn't it like the function in a play to be like, I'm the doctor who's going to tell you what's happening, as opposed to, she's fine.
The
oh my God, that's so
had an
funny.
Against
but it's like the doctor you played in Freak Dance. It's very similar to like, you know, like right. what's not helping Hal
not
Rudnick
helping.
Out at all
nope,
with
yeah.
information.
That's your typecast.
Yeah, yeah exactly. I know. Well, when I was in second grade, my play was school play was Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod, which was about you know it's a nursery rhyme about these three kids that travel during your dreams they travel in a wooden shoe.
Aww.
And then they visit different things and the villain is Halley's Comet for whatever reason. Oh. Halley's Comet's terrible and chasing them. But they go to different lands, and I played the African parrot who was really angry that I was woken up from sleeping. And I have this song. I remember it started, I would go, ack, ack, what's going on? And I have footage of it. I don't know where it is. The VHS exists somewhere.
Oh
but I remember
God.
Watching it in college, and my friends were like, Drew, this would be the role you would play now. Like, the angry parrot who's like, you've woken me up. I'm cranky.
Yeah. Voice
yeah, we just nice know. We, exactly. We just are who we are.
So did
I'm
this,
sorry. Anyway, go
did
back
this
to
actually.
No. I did. We did. We got a few friends from it. We another girl who was just very shy, who also aww. Didn't have a lot of friends. She became our friend. And we're still friends to this day. But it is. I kind of like the thing you were saying earlier about how high school you just kind of find your sense of humor and you find yourself. Mm-hmm. And I do feel really lucky in the long run that we did go to this school together where there were no boys and you had to wear a uniform. And we literally would just, like, go to the mall, not showered for a week and just, like,
oh my
not care and just, like, gross. And but we didn't think anything of it. And I just feel like we you know, we made stupid home movies together. We formed a band together.
Wow.
None of us had any, you know, musical talent. Yeah, I rented a bass from Guitar Center and I just, it just sat in my room. I didn't do anything with it, but just, we did stupid things, which, you know, and again, I'm still such good friends with them. I'm going out to dinner with one of them tonight, I don't know. We just, we really found each other and
particularly that whole, the theatrical element. Mm-hmm. It is so, to find a partner in that in such a scary time.
Yes.
And
yes.
That is the way you connect and the way you project yourself.
Yeah.
Thank God that you found.
Because I also not only found them, but I also feel like if I went to the public high school that everyone else went to, that we would have went to, it was so much bigger. There were so many other people there. I know I would have been lost. I know I would have just like, not been who I, at all been who I was. And I feel, you know, even though I do feel like we were such idiots, like we, you know, at this school, we had Shakespeare Day and we had Friendship Week where, you know, you had different themes and we would just like be on our front lawn, like with ribbon batons and just dressed up and so dumb. But I feel like, I needed that. I still needed. I was in that maturity level. Well,
it paved the way for what you do now.
Yeah.
And like, and even if you don't end up doing it with your life, it's so nice to have, like Joel just said, that partner.
Yeah.
And I've been so lucky in my life. I've always had that person to be weird with from day one. And it's been different people. I did move around a lot as a kid.
Yeah.
And I was very lucky that I'm still in touch with almost every, like, friend. I mean, like, yeah. I mean, I have a friend from when I was five when I moved to, when we were in Virginia, 5, 6, and 7. And he lives in Harlem now. And we still see each other now. And then we're Facebook friends. And we stay in touch with each other. Yeah. You know, and I remember we used to watch Scooby-Doo. And I remember, like, we got into a fight when we were maybe 6 years old about how Mama Cass died in the 60s. Like, that was not our contemporary. But I remember
what was the argument?
What side were you on the argument?
I remember, I think that I said she died by eating a sandwich.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then he said she died by eating a chicken bone.
I think it was a sandwich.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, Drury.
Wait, is that Drury?
Yeah.
Drew and Drury.
Yes.
Do you know that name?
No, I just think it's funny that you guys have.
Yeah, his name is Drew with an RY.
Yeah.
It's also a very old Southern name, Drury. You know, but you have those things. You remember those things that you know, and
in a terrifying world, you've got somebody.
Yeah.
You have somebody to be weird
with. And again, like you were saying earlier, whenever we meet up, me and my three other close friends, it is like we just press pause on wherever we last were and then play.
Just
and that to me is the best. It's like we haven't, even though we don't see each other a lot, we haven't changed enough where it's like, oh, I don't have anything in common with you anymore. We totally do. It's like, we still laugh at each other, and it is. It's really fun to have that.
I went from private school in – maybe that's part of also the going back to the middle school. I went from private school first through fifth grade to public school sixth grade.
Mm. Oh,
so
wow.
Fortunately, there's a couple of things to be grateful for. One, I have an older brother who was there an eighth grader when I was a sixth grader. So – he was the upperclassman when I was just this newbie, and he he was within reach.
Yeah.
But I also knew a few people through sports or athletics that, and people in my neighborhood, and my buddy Jason, and we like connected so quickly because he and I had not been in the same. He had been through the public school system, I think. Maybe I could be wrong on that. Yeah, I think he was in private school. So we both were sort of in this.
New world.
Bigger world ahead. And I had 30 people in my class for a private school.
Wow,
At most. And then hundreds.
Yeah.
And hard to navigate. We sat next to each other at the beginning of every school day. He would get beat up.
Oh.
I would not, for some reason. Maybe it was because my older brother was there.
Yeah.
Right.
And in 2 years, you wouldn't think of my buddy Jason as being beaten up at all because he was... He could fight if he wanted to. But at that time, we were so vulnerable, we didn't know what to do when we got bullied except just to take it. Those were terrible. Like, I hated that.
I hate that.
Oh, it was the worst time.
I hate thinking about that, too.
I know.
Especially having
that was the thing. I remember
now,
in seventh grade, every day I would come home from school and ask myself if I got called a fag that day. And if I didn't, that was a good day.
God.
And I so accepted that reality. Like, I was so like, okay, that's how it is. And that's like, that breaks my heart when I think about myself back then. I'm like, what was that? How did I just, and then weirdly, I just like, everybody kind of outgrew that, like, or in some horrible way, or they just moved on to some other thing. But,
yeah,
you know, it's just like everybody, you know, you're just like being pointed out what is different about you.
Yes. Yeah.
And you don't want to stand out. You don't want to do.
I felt like I for most of my middle school took, high school had a giant personality crisis. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what path to follow. I didn't know I knew a lot of people. I was friends with a lot of people. I felt like socially adjusted, but I also felt like an outsider in every group that I was in. And this is all just looking back.
Like,
I'm fine now.
But, I mean, we're great. We're great now.
Can I look around this middle school, please?
No, it's just, you know, it's so.
I have a personality.
I just want to look around.
When I was back here, I
exercised some demons.
You owe me this.
Oh my God, sir. Can you imagine him screaming, "You owe me this"?
To people who
do me this much. They have no idea who you are.
Yeah,
exactly. Oh my God, that's so funny. I love it.
It's so, oh God, I hate thinking about that stuff.
Yeah. I do a lot. I mean, when I occasionally asked, you know, for advice to kids, and sometimes like on like bullying day or like, you know, stand up against hate kind of situations. And what my message is always, this is temporary. I mean, when people say that it gets better, I'm like, yeah, but just know that this is, and there was something in me. I always felt very lucky that I knew that.
Yeah.
Like I had an awareness of like, oh, when I'm older, it's going to be better. Like,
yeah.
And like, I know that this is just a thing that I have to kind of get through. And then
you knew that at the time.
Yeah.
You felt that.
And a lot of kids sadly don't. And that's the thing where it's like this, you just get through this. Like, you know, you just have to, you know,
and looking back, there were like, talk about finding your partner or at least a friend. I remember seeing kids who didn't have that and I didn't know, I couldn't help them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The only solution was to bully them. I would imagine, right?
Now. Yeah.
No, but I remember seeing kids, not realizing, oh, how much damage they're undergoing right now because they don't have that partner, that friend, that somebody.
Right.
And we just like thought, oh, they're
or
the weird kid.
That thing, too, because I even, you know, again, teaching teens in improv classes, there are those kids where I'm like, I know in school you are not the popular kid.
Yeah.
I know that you are the kid who is
overlooked,
probably having a really hard time. But in these improv classes, I see them really shine. And that's where I'm like, oh, my God, like, I wish I could just have you
see?
In this class all the time. And
yeah.
In a way, but that does give me hope a little bit that they were even exposed to that. Because at the very least, they know, like, there is a community. There are other people like them in this community who just so appreciate them, can relate to them, and you can have fun here. And that's like the one thing where I'm like, oh, gosh.
That's what I think of the more they cut back on arts
in
high school.
I know.
That's starting so much alienation.
Well, and teaching, I mean, the arts, it's like we don't realize it's not just about putting on wigs and being crazy. You learn empathy.
Yeah.
You learn
working
how
together.
To. I mean, you learn how to be somebody, as to see the world from somebody else's point of view. And that's the thing that we don't always realize as you know, with the actors and what I do, but that is so invaluable.
Yeah.
And most people never get that experience. They they just see that through their own eyes, and this, and just learning how to like just tell stories and affecting people and all of it. Like, you know, I mean, I've talked about before, just art in general. Like, I mean, my adult coloring book that like calms me down when I take out crayons and magic markers is 40 years old and can just like relax and do that. There's something, or putting on music and all that stuff that is, it's like visceral. It's not frivolous. It's not like, you know,
Not extracurricular. It's not.
And I had very little exposure to that. I mean, other than, I will say, in my parents always took us to the theater and took us to, you know, to see movies. And you know, they were they're big on making us do that. But really in school, we had my theater department, there was no theater department in my high school. We had a theater drama club and a lot of it was me directing the plays every year.
Really?
I did. And you know, oh yes.
Yeah.
As a student, but there was no like, adult.
There was whatever advisor.
Yeah.
I remember my like sophomore year, they had some advisor and she was like a first year teacher and then she quit halfway through and I had to like direct the school play and then they just let me direct the plays there as long as I was there. And oh, I loved it. I mean, are you kidding? I was like, you know, I was talk about power tripping. Oh my God. I was like, this year we will be doing the Mousetrap. Auditions are tomorrow.
This year I will be doing
the I will be playing all the roles. You will come and watch me.
Yeah.
I'll send myself flowers. And
but it was all
secret signed. Admirers.
Yes. Exactly.
But it was all self-generated. There wasn't like an official.
And they were so pro sports. Like we had to take PE every year and like, you know, and it was so driven towards that. And it's the source of so much insecurity to this day.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm working out with a trainer and there's certain things he has me do. And I'm like, I have such anxiety about like hurdles, like jumping over a hurdle.
Oh, no.
I'm like, I can't do it. I can't do it. And he's like, you're jumping this high onto it. And I go, I know it's not a physical thing. It's a mental thing.
Totally.
That I have to get over. And like, just the humiliation of being in the gym and all that stuff.
We would have to do the mile run, like a mile run. And I could never do – I would always be like last, walking. And
I'm not competitive. Like, and that's the thing that's ultimately I think helped me in this business to not feel competitive. But I'm so not in sports that I don't care what the score is. And I just want to go in and – can we not just talk about how people are terrible and instead of like playing at sport?
Yes.
Anyway, well, it's up to us.
Change the world. Change the future.
Change the future.
One improv class at a time.
I know. Well, you guys were out of time. This has been a blast.
Yeah.
Thank you for giving your Friday afternoon.
Oh, well, thank you. Love talking about this stuff. So
I know. It was so nice. It's really love just nice. Going back.
Yeah.
Going back to school.
Going back to middle school.
That's
being a little creep.
I know. Creeps in school. All right. I want to thank my guests, Danny Morrow and Joel Spence. Thank you all for being on the show.
Thanks, Drew.
Thank you.
Have a great, everybody. Have a great week. Oh, I always say have a week. And I said have a great week.
I like that you almost said have a great everybody.
Have a great everybody. That's the message after today. All right, guys. Have a great everybody. Bye.